Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Monday, live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. I'm in a radio studio today and tomorrow. And then some vacation time for everybody, right? We'll be on radio only Wednesday. Abundance of caution, I am not in the TV studios today. Fox PR released a statement, so this is out there. Somebody on the Fox NFL show got COVID, so I was part of that group. So I'm just staying away from everybody. Abundance of caution. Have tested negative 3 times. We're all good. And got plenty of stuff to talk about. Joy Taylor's joining me. Joy, how are you? How was your weekend?
Weekend was good. Great day of football. Looking forward to tonight's game, another big game.
Yeah, Tom Brady and the Buccaneers host the Los Angeles Rams. Not like it matters, but I've got the Bucks tonight. No Andrew Whitworth for the Rams at left tackle. I think it's going to be a problem. But Mondays are calling right, calling wrong. I have plenty of strong opinions. Hold ourselves accountable when we miss, and here we go on a Monday.
Where Colin was right.
Been saying for years, Derek Carr reminds me of Tony Romo, and Tony Romo is going to get some Hall of Fame votes. He was on display last night. The guy is absolutely on fire. He's dead solid accurate. He's more mobile than half the quarterbacks in the league. He has total command of the offense, and he has a presence. He's completing 69.7% of his throws. He doesn't have the biggest arm, but I got to tell you, when you watch the Raiders last night, 23 of 31, 120 passer rating, you feel like he has complete and utter control of this offense. John Gruden knows he's got a winner, and Derek Carr was struggling pre-Gruden, and now they're in harmony.
Where Colin was wrong.
Thank God for the Colts, blazing 5-1-3. We're 25-28-1 on the year. The Chiefs loss, I think America lost on that. Andy Reid off a bye is generally perfect, covering the spread. You know what? To be announced tonight. It's been a weird year. I went 1-4, 4-1, 1-4, 4-1, and now 0-1-3. Weird year.
Where Colin was right.
I said Friday, Sean Payton's resume, he's earned my respect to name the starter of the Saints. Taysom Hill, short term, probably a better fit for the coaching staff, and Taysom Hill was excellent. 18 of 23, 108 quarterback rating, rush for 2 touchdowns. Taysom Hill has limitations, but running quarterbacks and the element of surprise they bring is a problem. And Atlanta had been playing really well, and suddenly they weren't. Yes, Jameis Winston is a better thrower of the football and is a more traditional quarterback. But Sean Payton's trying to win 3 games. That's all he cares about. And Taysom Hill is a curveball that Atlanta, a team they'll play in 2 weeks, just wasn't ready for.
Where Colin was wrong.
Carson Wentz and the Eagles, I can no longer defend either, and I've been a huge fan of both. Carson leads the NFL in picks. He leads it in fumbles. Doug Peterson, what is your offensive identity? I don't know what it is. What do they do well? They're finally healthy now. You can't use those excuses. I am officially off the Eagles.
Where Colin was right?
Well, this is not second guessing. This is first preaching. We told you, Joe Burrow in Cincinnati, this was our greatest concern. I said, if I was Joe Burrow, Carson Palmer threatened to retire. He did. He said, I'm retiring if you don't trade me from Cincinnati. I said, if I was Joe Burrow, I'd do everything I can not to play for him. The Bengals have an obligation to protect Joe Burrow, and like Andrew Luck and the Colts, they did not. And this is not second guessing. We've been on this for a year. Too many throws, no running game support, and the organization, shocker, Cincinnati is letting us down.
Where Colin was wrong.
If the season ended today, the Baltimore Ravens are not a playoff team. I know, I said 16-0, maybe 15-1. It's not just a can't play from behind thing because they led by 11 points in the second half. Yes, Lamar Jackson from behind isn't as good, and there are certain throws teams are begging him to make. What they're doing is filling up the running lanes. They're bringing people in the box and saying, throw it, we dare you. Right now, they do not feel, against good teams, like a playoff team.
Where Colin was right.
Never bought into Matt Patricia. I said before, looks matter. First impressions matter. He's kind of sloppy, hat on backwards guy. I've never thought the Lions players buy into him. And I made a call this weekend to somebody in the NFL I respect. And I said, like, what's the room like? What's the temperature? And he said, listen, you don't get a lot of buy-in with Matt Patricia. Didn't play. And there's a lot of arrogance. And there's a lot of, like, New England sense of entitlement. Like, I won. Players don't buy into him. How do you lose to a rebuilding team, to an XFL quarterback, and you get shut out with Matt Stafford? I mean, I've said before, Matt Stafford's a lot of stats and not a lot of big wins, but he's talented. This was bottoming out. That was players not buying into the coach.
Where Colin was wrong.
I've been saying for the last 2 weeks, I thought the Minnesota Vikings were the best team with a losing record. But the problem is all their talents on the offensive side. Kirk Cousins played really well. He really did. And Dalvin Cook's amazing. But you can't lose to the Cowboys at home. That's just that you just can't do it. And Green Bay lost, so that's good. Detroit lost, so in their division, they're not losing ground. But they are now a 4-6 team that struggles to get good offenses off the field, and that is their reality.
Where Colin was wrong.
Rob Pelinka and the Lakers had an absolutely unbelievable last week. I've said, the Lakers don't feel well run for the last several years. They got Montrezl Harrell, a young athletic big. They landed Mark Gasol, not only a great passer, but a tremendous low post defender. They got Dennis Schroeder, who can actually run a team, 18 points a game, and they throw in Wes Matthews, a 3-and-D guy, can hit a three, can D you up. Right now, I would make the argument, I know this sounds crazy, this is the most talent potentially LeBron's ever had. In Cleveland, he had stars, but no depth. He's got depth. In Miami, he had stars, but no size and didn't have a good backcourt. He's got now both. AD and Mark Gasol are two of the top three or four defensive bigs in the league. They got younger. They got deeper. They got more athletic. They got a couple of shooters. Home runs. This is as good a collection of seven or eight basketball players I believe LeBron's ever played with. And I include Miami. And I like Wade and Bosch and Battier. But that team had no size. They were sketchy at point guard. Lakers, kudos. Tip of the cap. Great week for Rob Pelinka. By the way, don't want to spend too much time on this because Philadelphia is not worth a discussion. But Doug Peterson, the coach, he's being asked now, should you just bench Carson Wentz? And here's his response.
If you get to that spot, whether you don't start him or you bench, I think you're sending the wrong message to your football team that the season's over, and that's a bad message. And we have to work through this. Times, you know, when times get tough, it's, you know, sometimes that might be the easy thing to do.
You know, I said this a couple weeks ago. If you're reckless as a quarterback, Carson Wentz and Sam Darnold. They're reckless. They have an it. They have talent. If my quarterback doesn't have an it, doesn't have an arm, there's got to be something special for me to give you another chance or another chance. Darnold and Carson Wentz, because there's a certain athletic ability and it factor, they'll get other chances. This morning I thought there's eight teams that'll probably draft a quarterback. Jags, New England, Washington, Indy, Chicago, San Francisco, Denver. I can make the argument they all need quarterbacks, maybe a couple more. Wentz and Darnold are on the market, and there's teams that need to be more dynamic at that position. But I almost wonder if it's time for a reset. It's just in the last couple years, it doesn't feel right. You know, I was in a conversation with my wife not long ago, and I said, if you want to buy a house, don't talk yourself into buying a new house. Let the house talk you into buying it. Or in other words, if something doesn't feel right, don't talk yourself into it. This puppy doesn't feel right now. I don't know what it is. Chris Cooley, the Pro Bowl tight end who played in that division and against Wentz, was on our show a couple weeks ago and said, something's just not right.
I think Carson Wentz is one of those interesting guys that maybe isn't a good fit for Philadelphia. To me, it seems like there's been issues with Wentz since he went down and Foles came in. Going back to that next year where they had the giant billboard of Nick Foles and you could tell it hurt Carson Wentz's feelings.
Yeah.
He's a guy that's an incredible playmaker. Wentz is a guy that can do anything you want him to do. He'll extend plays. He's great off script. He can make every throw on the football field. But at the same time, he's a guy that makes a ton of mistakes. And like you mentioned, he's a guy that ends up injured all the time. So I think that you really have a question mark on what you want to do with Carson Wentz in the future. Someone will pay him.
Yeah.
Because he's an outstanding talent. But I don't know if the fit's perfect in Philadelphia.
Listen, quarterback is, you know, certain sports, golf, baseball, and quarterback, certain sports, certain positions, confidence matters. Sam Darnold doesn't feel like he trusts the Jets. I'm not sure the Jets trust him. And Carson Wentz, something's wrong upstairs. I don't have the answers. Divorces happen. Reset. He'll get an offer. Carson Wentz will get an offer. Darnold will get an offer. But right now, it just doesn't look right. Trent Dilfer's around the corner on a Monday. Peter King, Tony Gonzalez, too, today.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
An NFL tradition continues on Fox as Washington takes on Zeke and the Cowboys. Thanksgiving Day, 4 Eastern, only on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Somebody, regrettably, is going to win that division. So, well, Washington's playing a little better, and, you know, Dallas had their best game of the year, it looked like. So, Trent Dilfer's, a couple years ago, he decided, I'm going to go coach high school football and pay football back for all it did for me. And he went to Nashville, Tennessee, to Lipscomb Academy, and they had a very good first year. Here's his second year. They won this past weekend, 56-13. They beat the defending state champs in Tennessee on their home field. And the championship game is December 3rd. They've won 11 straight games. Trent Dilfer, the Andy Reid of Nashville, Tennessee high school football, is now joining us live. 56-13, a win. And Trent, it's great having you on. First of all, congratulations. That has to be all the things you've done in football. I don't know where this is in the pecking order, but that's got to be an all-timer for you.
It really is. I'm so happy for this community, the boys. They've worked so hard. We still got some work to do, but it's been a great ride. And just this entire community's buy-in, the coaching staff, the players, administration, parents, you name it, everybody's rallied and really allowed these boys to have a special season.
Oh, that's great. So, Trent, we know Patrick Mahomes has a great arm, but I don't know if you ever had him in one of your Elite 11 classes. But there is a confidence with him, just kind of this his ability to play from behind. When you look at him, is some of that like genetics? What I mean, like he is so comfortable with a minute to go. He's so comfortable playing from behind, and as we know, many great quarterbacks have not been. That's not their strength.
Well, you know, yes, we did have him in camp, and I asked him if he was going to pursue football, and he said he wasn't. He was going to pursue baseball. So I'm still angry to this day that he didn't say he was going to play football. Of course we would have had him. You nailed it with confidence. He has such physical confidence and confidence in his preparation and skill set that he never panics. There's never, ever, ever a moment of flinch, a moment of panic. He doesn't hurry things up because there's chaos in the pocket or he sees a new defense or the time on the clock or the score in the game. There's just this calmness to him that allows him to do things that frankly, I've only seen one other person do, and that's Brett Favre. And I would argue that Patrick already is better in the game situations than Brett was. He's just an amazing talent to watch. He physically can do anything. So it's not hyperbole when you hear these people say, he's as talented as any quarterback that's ever played football. I would co-sign on the statements. But then there's that extra thing that you mentioned. It's this supreme confidence in his ability, in his offensive system, and tackling the world when the world's against you. I mean, there's just nothing that makes him get out of his comfort zone, and that's why you see these phenomenal things week in and week out from him.
Listen, so much, I mean, the program you've turned around, coaching matters, and it can really matter for a quarterback that feels shaken like Derek Carr. So, obviously, Gruden and Derek Carr, this is the best. It's almost as I look at Derek Carr, who I've always liked, and I'm like, I'm not sure if he can play better for the talent he has. So, what do you think Gruden did to turn him around? Because he was really struggling 3 years ago.
Yeah, I think you got to give Olsen, the offensive coordinator, Gruden, and Derek all equal credit here. John came in, he said, I'm going to change everything you've ever learned. And Derek's been taught some good stuff. It's not like he was chopped liver. One, Derek bought in. You know, most veteran quarterbacks are like, what are you talking about? I'm pretty darn good. But he bought in, and he was totally open to a retooling of everything, of his operation, let's call it that. Because it's more than just his technique or how he looked at the game, but the entire operation. He's become a coach on the field. I think every great play caller wants their quarterback to read their mind. I tell my quarterback all the time, hey, bro, at some point you got to read my mind. We got to be thinking the exact same thoughts when a call comes in. And John's accelerated that with Derek. And it's like having a coach on the football field. People talked about how cool it is to listen to the quarterback run the show at the line of scrimmage because there's no crowd noise. And I get it. If you're not accustomed to hearing all the stuff that an NFL quarterback does at the line of scrimmage, this could kind of blow your mind. But what Derek's able to do is John can give a call and Derek can just pour gasoline on that call with his ability to get up to the line of scrimmage, look at defensive line technique, linebacker profiles, secondary profiles, matchups, protection, run game, action game, movement game. He's got the whole toolbox at his disposal, much like Peyton Manning did back with the Indianapolis Colts, and he's just done a great job of managing that. He's also making great decisions. You know, the old West Coast philosophy was all about getting the ball in playmakers' hands as fast as possible. There's two checkdowns last night that Derek makes in the first half. It's like he had eyes in the back of his head. He gets four deep into his progression, hits the checkdown, and they go for 10 to 15, 20-yard gains. I mean, this is mastery of the West Coast offense, both at the line of scrimmage and after the ball is snapped.
So let's go to the opposite of this, Joe Burrow. Obviously, Joe's going to be fine starting next year. I mean, he took some hits. He's very talented. He's a very confident kid, and the injury stinks. But how long can a Joe Burrow take a beating, and then the light goes off? Then the switch flips, and that he just no longer wants to get hit like that. Are you worried that another year like this of, you know, hit 77 times halfway through a season, it starts to take a toll psychologically on a young player?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we talked about this early in the year. Nobody argues that Joe Burrow is a phenomenal talent. All three of these rookie quarterbacks are ridiculously talented, and I think all three are going to be great players. The danger in playing him early, for every Justin Herbert experience, which we can go on and on how fantastic he is, how it's worked out unbelievably well for the Chargers, there's five Joe Burrows where you take a super talented alpha male, you put him in there who's not willing to give up on a play, tries to be the hero on every single play, but you put him with a bad team and you're gambling that his confidence is going to get wrecked over time, that his body is going to age too early because of the hits he's taking. And I would be very concerned if I was Joe Burrow going back to the same situation next year unless they make some drastic changes to better protect him both with talent and with scheme. You know, if you watch Cincinnati play, it's not what Derek Carr is doing in Oakland. It's not what Herbert's doing with the Chargers. It's a lot of true drop back, 5-6 man protection where you expose your quarterback to unnecessary hits, and he's every bit as athletic as Herbert. They could do a ton of movement stuff with him like they do Herbert. They could do a lot of condensed formations if they had the creativity to do it to protect them. They haven't done that, and now you're looking at a quarterback who is having a phenomenal rookie year, having to sit the rest out. So this goes back to earlier season conversations that it's not so simple, people, just to say, play him. It's one of the dumbest comments made in today's narratives on young quarterbacks. Every situation is different, and you definitely are taking a risk if you play your young quarterback too soon and expose him to too much stuff.
You know, I've always been a big fan of Carson Wentz, but there does come a point that everybody in life, divorces happen, resets happen. Drew Brees got a reset. Do you get to a point in Philadelphia where maybe it's the Nick Foles statue? I don't know. I'm not there. But would you think about, like, listen, it's just not, we drafted a kid, Jalen Hurts. Something's not working. The fans are eating him alive. We're a loud city. Something's in his head. Do you reach a point in Philly they may have to consider that?
Well, let's talk about something else first. And yes, I do think it needs to be considered. Doug Peterson's a friend. But if Doug called me and said, what the heck's going on? I'd say, coach him harder. Like, quit being so soft. You know, you can't teach talent, but you can teach and coach discipline. You can teach and coach discernment. You can teach and coach team ball. There's been a ton of fantastic talents. I'll use Brett again. Brett Favre was reckless, off the field, on the field. He was a mess, uberly talented. And Mike Holmgren and that staff coached him as hard as any human being's ever been coached. Steve Young was coached hard by that staff in San Francisco when he came in and played like a hair's on fire and every play wanted to run around and be frenetic, and they coached him out of that. You can coach all this stuff out of Carson. And the team deserves you to coach this out of Carson. He's wildly talented, as talented as any player in this league. But he is playing awful football for an extended period of time, and I blame the coaching. If my quarterback did that, I would say that is my fault. It is our job to coach him harder and to coach this stuff out of him. I can't coach his talent, but I can coach the rest. And I think they've just done an awful job of being too soft on him and let him continue to do the reckless thing he does that costs his team games. Now, if they're going to say, well, we can't coach him any harder, we've tried all this stuff, then it's time to move on, because this stuff is not going to change unless every single moment of every single day is relentless coaching of Carson Wentz to not make him so reckless with the football.
That's good stuff. We'll end on that. 11 straight wins for Lipscomb Academy. They play in the state championship December 3rd. Wow. 56-13. That must feel great. That must be an amazing feeling, because you told me for years – I asked you about coaching, and you're like, oh, NFL coaching, you have no life. I'd never see my kids. But you seem to be having the time of your life.
I am. And we have a huge challenge. You know, the thing about coaching, I told the kids this a few weeks ago when we were rolling. I said the problem with winning and winning championships is you really never get to smell your farts. You never really get to enjoy it. You never really get to sit back and breathe it in until it's all over. And we're taking that approach. So we didn't celebrate. We went and shook their hands. We got on the bus. We came home. We went back to work the next day. We're working today. We don't think we've accomplished anything. We want to finish it on December 3rd, and then we'll give them a few hours to celebrate before they go play basketball and the other things that they do as kids.
That's what high school sports is like. We got to play another sport. Trent, great talking to you.
Thanks, brother. See ya.
Yeah. That's great. He told me for years, I used to ask Trent, I said, you should go into coaching. He's like, oh, NFL coaching is the worst. Crazy billionaires. You never see your wife. You don't see your kids grow up. And high school, you get a little bit more of a life. And the players listen to you. All of them. Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, a very well-coached team is the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they kept their undefeated season going with a dominant win over the Jacksonville Jaguars Sunday. Pittsburgh's defense held Jacksonville to only 206 total yards and 3 points and intercepted Jake Luton 4 times on their way to their 10th win. They're the 18th team in the Super Bowl era to start 10-0. 10 of those clubs made the Super Bowl, and 6 won it all. So trending positively for the undefeated Steelers in that regard.
Minkah Fitzpatrick made plays. And the other thing is, Joy, they do appear to be getting better. And not just because they're playing like bad teams, but like you watched yesterday, now they're playing with the confidence of a 10-0 team. Like, they're looking for knockouts. Now they're playing with a ton of confidence.
Yeah, that's how you need to beat that Jacksonville team. And I know Mike Tomlin and Ben Roethlisberger were talking a lot about Jacksonville leading up to the game, that they're taking them very seriously. And if you look at their record against Jacksonville, that they should be. Jacksonville has had their number for the past couple years. So they did what they were supposed to do, which is dominate them yesterday. Now they play the Ravens on Thanksgiving night, so that's a very big game. The Ravens coming off a heartbreaking loss this weekend. So really looking forward to that. But Chase Claypool became the first wide receiver in the Super Bowl era and fourth in league history with at least 10 total touchdowns in his first 10 games.
Wow.
So they have a star in him. And Mike Tomlin said after the game, it wasn't perfect, but nothing is perfect about us except our record.
I love that.
So he's flexing a little bit as he should be, but that's going to be a great game on Thursday. Looking forward to that. So the Texans got their third win of the season and first against a team other than Jacksonville with a 27-20 victory over the Patriots yesterday. Deshaun Watson was great. 75% completion of his passes for 344 yards and 2 touchdowns. He also ran for 36 yards and a touchdown. Cam Newton threw for 365 yards and a touchdown, but was limited to a season-low 6 yards rushing. So New England falls to 4-6. And it's first time since 2009 and that the Patriots will have at least 6 losses in a regular season.
Yeah, they have been the opposite of New England. You have no idea what you're getting week to week with New England. You have no idea. And it's COVID, it's injuries, it's players opting out. But they just don't have the depth of talent. If one or two guys are hurt, they can't move the football. It's that simple.
Well, it's just one of those years with New England, and I know that New England fans and a lot of the media just, I think, out of respect for what the Patriots have done over the past 20 years and out of respect for Bill Belichick, didn't want to say that the Patriots were going to fall off this year, COVID aside. But, you know, we talked about it a lot before the season started when they were, you know, pitching us Jarrett Stidham and that, you know, this is still New England's division. Like, no, it's not. This is not a good football team. There's a reason why Tom Brady isn't there. He could have easily finished out his legacy and his career in New England if he thought it was a situation that he could possibly be successful in. And they would be better with Tom Brady. And I think that they would have been better had Cam Newton unfortunately tested positive. They lost a lot of momentum there. But this is also just not a great football team. And it's not the end of the world. Yeah. I think Bill Belichick has something up his sleeve. They'll figure it out eventually. It's just not going to be this year. So the AFC East now has the Bills obviously atop at 7-3, Dolphins 6-4, and then, you know, we know what the Jets are, and obviously New England. But it's between the Bills and the Dolphins now. The Bills' remaining schedule is the Chargers, then at the 49ers, the Steelers, at the Broncos, at the Patriots, and then last game against the Dolphins. Dolphins' remaining schedule is at the Jets, the Bengals, the Chiefs, Patriots, at the Raiders, and at the Bills. So their final schedule is a little bit easier than the Bills, but I think this will end up coming down to, as you've said many times, the last game of the season, which would be Bills and Dolphins in Buffalo.
Yep.
So Tom Brady and the Buccaneers are a 4.5-point favorite tonight over the Rams, according to Fox Bet. But the team's performance in primetime hasn't been great this season. 2 of their 3 losses have come in night games, so Bruce Arians altered the practice schedule to help the team prepare. And when asked if he thought it would help Tampa tonight, Tom Brady said, "I hope so. It's about our process and trying to go out there and do a good job. Whatever it takes for us to play well, that's what we're focused on."
Yeah.
So a very big game tonight to finish out the big weekend. Remember, they had the Thursday night loss to the Bears. They lost 2019. Then obviously the Saints blow out 38-3.
Yeah, the reality is if the Rams can run the football, they have a chance to win or cover. And if they can't, and I have my questions without Andrew Whitworth, it's a long night because Goff, when comfortable with a run game, is an excellent quarterback. When he doesn't, he's very average. He dictate terms. If McVay has a lead, he's never lost in his career. So that means when they're comfortable, they run the ball, they set the tempo, they get a lead, Rams win. The first half will tell you the story of this football game, Joy. You'll know 3 series in how it's going to go for the Rams. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
By the way, Tua got benched yesterday. I just had a couple of thoughts. Number one is Miami couldn't run the football if you watch that game. And Miami ran for 56 yards. So that meant Tua was in a situation with no running game, trailing in a game. It was his first obstacle. This is the way it works. Denver's always been the Bermuda Triangle for young quarterbacks and old quarterbacks, too. Tom Brady always struggled there. First game in cold, first game high altitude. He played in Hawaii, then Alabama, then he goes to Miami. This is why the Vegas odds makers had it as a field goal game. He got behind. They couldn't run. The reality is they benched him. He'll be fine. He's going to start next week. Don't forget, Kyler Murray was 5-10-1 as a rookie. We love him. Josh Allen was 5-6. We like him a lot. So, Tua, it's a first for him. first altitude, first cold weather game, first big, probably the first big deficit he's ever played in college with. First time in his life and his career, they had no running game. He wasn't getting defensive touchdowns. So they're way ahead of their rebuild. Don't forget, Miami, this time last year, Miami was the worst team in the NFL. 1 year ago today, they were the worst team in the NFL trading players. So they're way out of schedule. He's going to be fine. The Dolphins next 2 weeks, Jets and Cincinnati, they'll win both, be 8-4, and it'll be like it never happened. Peter King is around the corner on a Monday.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Pure Talk USA, grab your phone, dial #250 and say Colin Cowherd. Get 50% off your first month of Pure Talk USA. Simply smarter wireless. He's been a sports writer of the year 3 times. Football Morning in America by Peter King at NBCSports.com. And he is now joining us live. Pro Football Hall of Fame voter for 30 years. So I was saying I grew up in a generation. Boxing was bigger. College basketball guys like Patrick Ewing would stick around for 4 years. And the Raiders were always wildly fun every Sunday afternoon. It was either against Dan Fouts or the Dolphins and Shula or the Steelers. Everybody was their rival. And I got to tell you, Peter, last night I felt for the first time in years the Raiders were back. That's what it felt like, the coaching, the quarterback, the toughness, the running. What say you?
It makes me long for a round three in January.
Yeah.
And look, Colin, that's not ridiculous either, because look at where the Raiders are right now. If they make the playoffs, they got 4 losses right now. If they make the playoffs, they're going to be probably the 6th or 7th seed, right? And if they make the playoffs, it looks like right now the Chiefs will be the 2nd seed. Now, you know, there's still football left to be played. Chiefs might even be first. You don't know. But you know, I just hope that however the weird 7-team playoffs, or maybe 8 teams, we'll see, however that works out, I hope it includes a game between the Vegas and Kansas City at Arrowhead.
You know, I'm watching, I haven't done much Cowboy talk in the last 3 weeks. They're just not that interesting. And I was really on the Minnesota Vikings the last 3 weeks. I'm like, I don't care about their record. This is a good football team. Then they lay an egg yesterday. And actually, they played well offensively. And we get to a point now where you start talking about getting a new quarterback or getting a new coach. Green Bay is going to win this division. Look at their schedule. What are they going to do in Minnesota? Because they've got a tremendous front office. The offensive talent is uniquely good. What is going to happen at the end of the season in Minnesota? Because this now is a 4-6 football team in a crowded NFC. They don't look like a playoff team. And I think they got too much talent to sit home during the playoffs.
My gut feeling is, unless it's a debacle the last 6 weeks, and I don't think it will be, they play in Jacksonville, Chicago, Detroit. I don't think it's going to be awful down the stretch. I think they bring back Zimmer and Spielman. They like them both a lot. I would be surprised if they made a change. I think they chalk it up to a pandemic year and go at it again in 2021.
You know, yeah, but by the way, I saw a quote from Bill Belichick about 3 weeks ago. He's, you know, it was a kind of anonymous quote from somebody that said Belichick kind of thinks this year is a little bit of a joke. So I do think there's guys that are going to save their job in college football and pro due to the pandemic. Now, Sean Payton, my theory on Sean Payton was duct tape works. Sometimes it buys you time. And that Taysom Hill may not be the long-term answer. But to have to face him when you don't have any tape on him, Tebow was a handful. And I looked yesterday and I'm like, was the genius of Sean Payton saying, this isn't a decision for the future of the franchise. I'm trying to win 3 games and nobody's seen Taysom Hill play before. And it's hard to prepare for.
I think that's part of it. But I think Sean Payton, I mean, look, I go back to the first discussion I ever had with Sean Payton, which was at the scouting combine in 2018. This is almost 3 years ago. It's well over 2.5 years ago. And I had coffee with him one day in Indianapolis, and he was telling me just the story of this guy. And he said, I'm really fascinated by him. He said, I think he can be Steve Young. And so I've just sort of kept that in my back pocket. And every time I brought him up, Sean Payton loves him. He's fascinated by him. What does that mean? I don't know what it means, but I do know. And I talked to Payton last night, and he told me absolutely categorically that he was going to give this shot to Taysom Hill. It's not about, I love Taysom Hill. We have invested a lot of time, a lot of energy in this guy, and he's done everything right. And look, Jameis Winston is a fascinating prospect, and I think that Peyton really does like Jameis Winston. But it's not like Jameis Winston, comes in as some, incredible, comes in like, say, Steve Young, the backup to Joe Montana, and he say, oh, my God, we got to play him. I mean, Jameis Winston's got more interceptions than anybody in football over the last 5 years. So I'm not sure that you should be just devoted to Jameis Winston and said, we got to give him a shot. This surprised me a little bit because early on in the week, it seemed like it was going to be Jameis. But after listening to Peyton explain why, now I'm not surprised at all.
Peter King joining us. How much of the Joe Burrow injury is just on the organization not protecting him?
Well, Colin, I did something in my column today that basically looked at all quarterbacks who are fairly mobile and, how often do they get exposed, either by running the ball, setting up the throw, or being sacked. And, like Lamar Jackson is right around 40 times a game. I call them exposures, And so, there's a lot of guys who are like Joe Burrow. He gets out, he runs it, and all that. And he had 48.9 exposures per game this year.
Wow.
Which was more than anybody that I didn't do all 32 quarterbacks. I did like 10 of them. But Russell Wilson's at 45. It seems like to me he's gotten used to protecting himself. And I just think that I'm not in any way blaming Zach Taylor. His job on Monday and Tuesday is to figure out a game plan to win a game. He can't say to himself, well, geez, I can't expose Joe Burrow. But I do think that if I were Zach Taylor and I was self-scouting the coaching staff at the end of this year, I would say, we should probably be disciplined in trying not to get Joe Burrow hit as much as he was hit this year. So, again, I do not blame him, but I do say it's probably a learning experience and a very painful one for Zach Taylor.
Read his column. It's always great in a Monday. We are short on time today. Football Morning in America, Peter King, NBCSports.com. His Monday columns are worth the 25, 35 minutes it takes you. I can hear a fax machine. That's a GM sending him vital information right now. Peter.
All the best, Colin. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you very much. By the way, MDriveStart.com, one scoop every day, chocolate mousse in the morning, nutrition, nutrients, mdrivestart.com. Read Peter King's stuff. Yeah, I'll tell you, you look around at some of these teams, and like Green Bay is a good football team. I've seen a flaw. Raiders can't stop people, but God, they're fun to watch. Kansas City, Pittsburgh feel like the two best teams in the league. Watch the Buccaneers tonight against the LA Rams. You'll know by halftime. When I do Rams games, you can tell 2-3 series in, if Goff has time to throw, they're running the football, Tampa's in trouble. If they're not running the football and he's throwing on 2nd and 8 or 3rd and 7, Goff's in trouble. Big night for Tom Brady. The Rams, I've had success betting the Rams this year. They're not real complicated. Goff is comfortable, they win. And you could say, well, that goes for every quarterback. No, it doesn't. Some quarterbacks, Mahomes trails all the time. He's not always comfortable. He's sometimes having to play catch-up. Deshaun Watson won this weekend. He's not always comfortable. A lot of quarterbacks in this league win when they're not always comfortable. Goff needs to be comfortable. So, final hour's coming up. What a weekend. By the way, if you live in Los Angeles, you can't go eat at restaurants anymore starting Wednesday, but your sports teams are eating. Dodgers won the World Series. Lakers, LeBron's best team ever. What a weekend for Rob Pelinka and the Lakers front office staff. That next, The Herd.